welcome to the Mega C-Suite series, a very special edition brought to you by Cyber Risk Meetup. My name is Charmaine Tan, and I'm your host for today. I'm also the organizer of Cyber Risk Meetup. And this is what I do in my own spare time just for you guys, for the community. My real day job is really being the executive advisor at PrivaSec, where I work with CISOs or different C-suite in terms of really helping them to understand their business gaps and helping them to bridge that. So today I'm really, really excited because we have a very special guest. Before I get to him, I'm just going to give a welcome to the rest of our members first. We have our Cyber Risk Meetup members joining in from Sydney, Brisbane, Perth, Melbourne, Singapore, and our latest addition, Tokyo as well. And we have quite a lot of new friends joining in from pretty much different parts of the world. So that's really exciting to have you here with us today. For those who missed out on the previous few episodes, we have had a good session with Dan Lawman for episode one. We also had quite a really amazing discussion around different challenges that CFOs face and how CISOs can work together to help communicate better with them and be more collaborative. So that's episode two. And today we have episode three with Jeff McArthur here with us. So really, before I get on to that, I want to encourage actually the rest of you, if you stay all the way to the end of the episode, there's a special bonus this time where I'm running my own program and it's really for the next generation leaders, and I want to help equip them on how they can communicate better and even connect with people on a virtual world. So I will be giving 5 free slots and the link actually at the end of the episode. So that's a special just for you guys. Okay, and without further ado, we are on to our episode 3, where we will be having a lot of real chats about, the challenges a CRO face, and also, practical tips and insights. I'm hoping that Jeff would be able to walk us through that. Okay, so just want to introduce Jeff quickly. He is, I've put it on the screen so you can read through his bio, but in a nutshell, he is a very experienced person with lots of financial services background for more than 20 years. He looks really young for his experience. More than 20 years in, the UK, Europe, New Zealand, and Australia. And he was previously the head of compliance and also the head of digital risk at Westpac for more than 7 years before joining Greater Bank as their new chief risk officer. So with that, we're going to do this a little bit differently as well, because I want to make it really snappy. There's a lot of questions that have come in from our members and the community, and I want to get through as many questions as possible. So I'm going to be on a roll this time, and I told Jeff to try to keep his answers to 90 seconds, which is, let's see if he can ride up to that challenge. But are you ready, Jeff?
I am indeed.
Fantastic. All right. So I want to find out, how does the new life of a chief risk officer look like since COVID? Maybe you can talk about any BCP or cyber risk learnings that you can share with all of us.
Oh, gosh. Part of the reason why I'm only joining a couple of minutes before is because of the COVID-19. So the challenges in the last month. Interestingly, you asked me a few days ago around challenges a CRO faces. And a month ago, I'd have probably said operational resilience. I'd have said emerging threats, emerging risks. I'd have said cyber. I'm not sure I would have said pandemic at the time. But if you think about what the pandemic in the last month has challenged all of us, but particularly CROs, is actually across all three of those. So yes, market and credit risk is often an obvious one in pandemics. Operational resilience has been a huge one in the last month. But also the emerging threats, whether it's particularly the cyber. I think I saw an article a few days ago where the FBI announced that cyber crime has quadrupled in the last month. the EU Interpol have also been announcing the amount of increased both cyber criminal and financial crime in the last month as well. So it goes to show that really has lifted up in the last month in this area. One of the challenges is the response. So for any chief risk officer is how do you make sure you're responding correctly? That has been one of the greatest challenges because it starts to stretch your capabilities. You know, these are all things which when you pan out as a scenario, you tend to have as a theoretical. So you've got the plan on the shelf ready to go. You kind of hope you never actually have to execute it. But when you do come to execute it, that's where the challenge of finding the capabilities and deploying them quickly is coming. Surprisingly, with the intervention of regulators, the intervention of governments and policymakers, you know, for all the media attention around the COVID-19, after the first week or two, it's actually settled down to a bit more of a business as usual cadence.
Yeah, I recall actually, like when we were talking prior to this, you know, you mentioned about really needing to have that foresight, right, to preempt things like that. And then interestingly, before this situation actually happened, you know, you were having similar discussions with the board already. Maybe can you share with us like what led you to have such foresight, or, you know, when you took on the role, what are the key things you had to focus on as a CRO?
I think it would be fair to say that history tells us that there are events that occur globally every 7 years. So you go back to the 2000s to 2001, you go back to GFC 2008, 2009. The foresight is statistically, and I'm a huge data nerd, but statistically, we were overdue an event. Now, history also teaches all of us that it's unlikely to be a repeat of an event that's happened in the past. So a lot of the benefit a good risk manager brings, whatever risk class that is the ability to look at, regardless of the event, what might some of the impacts be, and start to answer some of the what ifs. So certainly in recent years, it would be fair for me to say the safe money was on the effect that something would happen. Even if we didn't know what it would be, whether it was pandemic or otherwise, something would happen. And therefore, I think I said to you in the past, when you're not in crisis management, you actually have the best thinking time.
Yes.
And therefore, one of the tips I'd give your listeners this morning is use the time when you're not doing because that time you have to think and to plan is invaluable, because when you end up in a crisis, you actually end up doing. You don't actually have a lot of time to do thinking.
Yeah, I really love that. And that's the time, the prime time when you can be more strategic, right? And you can focus on really coming up with well-developed plan and strategy. So I'm thinking, let's rewind a little bit. Like, if you can share with our audience how your chief risk officer journey has been like. You know, have you always wanted to be a CRO? You know, and perhaps what are the key differences, if you can talk about it, like from working in a global bank and then moving into a digital bank?
Okay. So did I always want to be a CRO? I think if I reflect back to 16-year-old Jeff, I'd have probably wanted to be an actuary. Okay, maybe not an actuary.
Okay.
I don't know, 16-year-old Jeff probably wanted to be a pilot, but my background's quite a diverse one, and I suppose, you know, I started originally as an accountant. It would be fair for me to say I fell into banking, but it would also be fair for me to say my passports There's another story around the number of passports I've got, but my passports all say occupation banker. So maybe that answers the, did I want to be a CRO? I didn't have it as the job title to aspire to, but I do remember my first manager, Patricia, and on the first day in the bank, she said to me, "Welcome to Risk, Jeff." Now, that doesn't sound like a particularly insightful thing to say to a CRO, but at the time I was working in the mailroom. So it taught me from a very early day that going into banking and financial services, regardless of the role I would be doing, meant I was going to be a risk manager. What that actually meant is my journey to becoming a chief risk officer started like a lot of young bankers, of doing products, doing strategy, working in retail, doing technology, marketing, finance.
A very diverse background, yep.
Absolutely. And one of the ways I carved out the specialism of risk was I coming at it from a product and strategic lens. So one of the things I found many years ago was I would be spending a lot of time future gazing. And by that, what I mean is I'd be looking at the world 3 or 5 years in advance to try and work out strategically what markets and segments the business I was working at should be playing. One of the areas I found of great interest was the regulatory environment. So as regulations changed, as policymakers sought to intervene in markets, what might that mean strategically for the business I was working for? So I ended up weaving in risk and external environment and strategic risk, albeit I was coming at it from a different lens. From there, I actually discovered I've got a huge passion for it. It probably goes back to Patricia on my first day in banking. But what I also discovered is over the last 10 or 15 years, I got more and more hungry to explore more and more risk classes. So you picked up on, over years, it's been compliance, it's been digital and tech risk, it's been credit, it's been a number of very specialist, narrow risk expertise, which probably in the last few years, I've been passionate about wanting to stitch those together. So one of the, I suppose, differences, or one of the requirements for a CRA is somebody who can actually see that the sum of the parts can sometimes be greater, but also see how all those individual risks might sit together. And it's one of the areas that boards are particularly, the silo of each risk class is important, but really what they want to know is, like the current pandemic, is how all of those events stitch together, more importantly, what the response might be.
Yeah, I think that's very encouraging for aspiring CROs as well. For our younger audience, to not discredit your experience that you have, because all the different experience would eventually add up where you will be able to put a different, broader lens over it, right? And it helps you in your communication with senior executives further down your career as well. So that's really good. So I guess when you talk to other CROs, right, in the industry, what do you see are the same challenges that keeps coming up in the conversation, that they are facing? And any practical tips on how they can work on overcoming that?
Interestingly, one of the consistent challenges, and I'm going to take a slightly different tact over this than would be normal. Normal wisdom would be, I talk to you about external environment of threats or, some of the internal responses. But one of the greatest challenges for the risk community and for CROs actually comes back to capability. So, when you balance the particularly with the environment, the digital transformation going forward, it's changing the capabilities required of the risk management function. It's changing the skill sets. So by that, what I mean is you have people like me who I would describe myself as a generalist.
Okay.
Yes, I have some very huge nerd parts, technology, cyber. I'm a bit of a financial nerd, and I quite like reading lore and bits and pieces as well. But one of the challenges we have as CROs is that future capability. Risk historically has done incredibly well. Look back, and you know, go back to my earlier comment around what history can teach us. The value add I have in that is the future projection, not the fact that I can look back. One of the challenges we have going forward is those capabilities to get people who are able to take, you know, often historical backward-looking insight and intelligence, apply that, and then put some insight and intelligence on what the future might look like.
And that, yeah, that's very difficult.
Easier said than done, because that also means that it's incumbent on us to try to work out what those capabilities are and build the future risk nodes and build the future risk capabilities. One of the passions for me over the last 10 or 15 years has actually been, you know, the digital journey, the transformation.
Yeah.
When I started out, it was all e-channels and e-commerce. Now we use the word digital, but one of the fascinating challenges for me is how do you do that with you know, risk nodes? More importantly, how do you use some of this emerging technology to also manage risk? So, you know, for me going forward, what I'm passionate about is, you know, we talk about emerging technology, AI, machine learning. One could argue it's not really emerging. You know, machine learning has been with us since the 60s, I think. How do you use some of this technology to manage risk itself? Will I be replaced by a machine?
But that brings me to an interesting question, right? How do you actually influence strategic like risk objectives, but at the same time balance it between the financial and operational constraints that organizations would have?
It's one of the consistent challenges of any risk function is, you know, one of the value adds of a risk function is assisting the business to make risk-informed decisions. Those are not the same as managing risk to zero. So, you know, we would be kidding ourselves if we believed that we lived in a no-risk world. But one of the holy grails in dealing with this is trying to give sufficient information. By that, I mean, you know, one of the tips I would give our listeners and audience is data and evidence. There's always a little bit of gut and professional judgment, but the more data and evidence we can give to decision makers, whether that's the board, execs or CROs, the better, particularly where there is that risk aspect. So there is that trade-off, you know. We often talk about risk, but we do forget that the other part of the scale is reward. We also sometimes talk about risk in a negative or dirty way, where actually risk can be good as well.
Yep. So, all right, just conscious of time, I'm going to try and speed up the rest of the questions. So this is my favorite topic, really. Like, how do you then, you know, bearing all that you have shared earlier, how do you, like, talk to the board? You know, what's the approach that you take? Maybe there's any quick, interesting stories that you can share with the audience?
So one of the tips I would give in terms of talking to boards is for anyone who's done AML is KYC. Know your customer. So and I was going to do KYA, know your audience. One of the key aspects is, and this has nothing to do with being a risk nerd or a CRO at all, is know your audience, know your board. One of my greatest successes in recent years is also being able to act as a translator in some respects. That's the value I bring is being able to understand what the board need to discharge their duties, understand what the board need in order to make strategic decisions. And bear in mind, a lot of the decisions you'll be asking of boards, execs, won't manifest themselves for a year or two. So they should be making decisions today that impact the business in a year or two. You know, you've got to be able to recognize that's where their head is. They're looking at big picture. They want things stitched together. They want to know how the scales are balanced across a number of paradigms. It's not just the operational finance. So there are, I suppose one of my tips would be, there are plenty of insights available, whether it's the AICD here in Australia, the IOD in the UK, indeed even the regulators themselves give fairly concise summaries of what the duties are on the board. As risk nerds, if we understand those, it helps that translator role that I talked about, and it helps the board receive the message. Fair to say, it also gives you good engagement and good support from the board as well, because you're able to bridge the gap.
What is a key specific tip that you would give just for CISOs or other cybersecurity leaders that actually end up having an opportunity to speak to the board?
It could be a little bit obvious, but some of it is be contentious. And do try to pivot your message. So there are a number who will either talk technically or in very threat language, which is okay if you want to scare a board, but if you think about the behavioural and psychological responses, people, when they're scared, sometimes don't make particularly good risk decisions. So one of the things I would do is attempt to pivot and pitch slightly differently. One recent CISO spoke to me a couple of weeks ago and shared with me a statement that said cybercrime will be the third largest industry in the world in the 20s. So he didn't tell me it was a big deal. He didn't tell me about the threats. He didn't tell me about the consequences. He just merely stated that it was going to be the third largest industry in the world. So when you start thinking about things like that, it starts to put some of it into perspective. Most boards for probably the last 5 years now are aware that cyber risk, cyber security, and cyber crime should be on their top three or top five. They know that. What they're actually what they actually want to know is help me understand it, give me some context. So I'd use another C, context. Yep. Give me it concisely and clear. And yes, be a bit contentious in some of this.
I really love that. And you've brought across like really practical stories and examples as well, which is helpful because having like even for the industry leaders, right, having a better understanding of the world of the CROs, the language that you guys use, the mindset that you have, really helps us to also learn how to collaborate better with you. And together, you know, it's all about building that ecosystem. So that's really helpful. I think we are running short on time. We actually pretty much covered, I really like that what we did. It was pretty snappy. We covered a lot of questions, so way more than the last few episodes. So that's great. For the rest of the members, community members, I'm just gonna quickly share the screen with you. If you have more questions, you know, that you want to find out in terms of hearing more insights from different C-suites, do let me know. And I think with that, we are going to wrap up in the next couple of minutes. If you can just stay online, I'm trying to figure out how to get this slideshow going again. Hey, can everyone see it all right? Yeah, is it the full screen? Because it's not showing.
Oh, it's not the full screen. No.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Let me just. Oh, I know. Let me just show this. Okay. He actually has quite a lot of back-to-back calls. So thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today. If you need to jump off, feel free to do that. Is there any last words you want to share with us?
My last tips to you all is probably around some C's. Care, creativity, curiosity, context, conciseness, and commitment. I reinforce my be free, be welcome to be contentious. Boards, people like myself, do like the alternative view. So don't be shy in providing that alternative view. I suppose just do it within the other C's that I've given. So you can still do it in a caring way, you can still do it in a creative way, you can still do it with, you know, the curiosity, you can still do it while providing context and being concise.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time, Jeff. I'll let you hop off and really appreciate this. And I'm going to just move on to the end of the episode. Okay, so.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you so much once again, Jeff. Take care. So bye-bye. The rest of you guys, we have episode 3 that will be coming up on YouTube. So you can just subscribe to Cyber Risk Meetup on YouTube and you get to see, catch up on the rest of the episodes. That's pretty much it that we have for today. Thank you everyone for staying all the way. Next episode actually is up for grabs. You can sign up on the link below, and that's the 7th of May. So it will be really exciting because it is an APAC focus actually. So I look forward to seeing all of you there. Okay, thank you everyone for joining us. Take care.